As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome back to the Game Football Podcast from The Times. Today we reflect on a magical weekend in the fourth round of the FA Cup as Boreham Wood shock Bournemouth to move on to the last 16. We'll also be talking about exits for both Leicester City and Manchester United and what they mean for the club. Liverpool's Harvey Elliott makes a brilliant return and we'll talk about his teammate Mohamed Salah and why he didn't take a penalty in the Africa Cup of Nations final. This is The Game. Hello and welcome back to the Game Podcast. I'm Hugh Wisencroft alongside Alison Rudd and Tom Clark. Hope you all had a great weekend. What a weekend it was in the FA Cup. This year's competition keeps on throwing up fantastic ties and, of course, giant killings as well. Boreham Wood of the National League beating aside, I think, 78 places above them in the shape of Bournemouth last night to keep the magic of the Cup. Yes, I said it myself, alive. That is the biggest win, of course it is, in their 74-year history, and it sets up a fifth round tie against Everton at Goodison Park. Magical scenes, Tom.
Absolutely. They thoroughly deserved it as well. I think what was interesting watching that performance was that a lot of the upsets and the magic, as you say, whether it's non-league or some of the teams higher up the pyramid that we'll discuss later on, a lot of these upsets have come from positive football, you know, attacking football. Boreham Wood were pressing Bournemouth all over the pitch. They could have scored before they did, and they had a few kind of half chances. And it's, you know, it comes to a real confident play. It's not, yes, there's some backs to the wall moments later on. Of course there are, but a lot of these teams and teams that we've discussed on previous shows from previous rounds have been really positive and attacked these teams higher up the pyramid. And from that point of view, that's what's been really positive to me about these upsets and shocks.
Lovely scenes, though. The fans going absolutely mad. I think there were 1,400 of them, 500 more than they would get as an average attendance at their own home ground. Their manager, Luke Garrard, only 38 years old, fighting back the tears. That was nice on Match of the Day. I saw him looking up to the heavens. He was very emotional.
Yeah.
That is also what the FA Cup's about.
Yeah, and also it's also about money for these clubs as well. You're speaking.
You think the tears were in his eyes because of how much his bonus?
not for him, although I hope he is due a bonus, definitely, because he definitely deserves it. For the team's performances. But the owner as well, after the game, talking about remortgaging his house to keep the club afloat during coronavirus. You know, we spoke on the podcast a lot about these clubs lower down the pyramid and the difficulties they'd have had with no fans and things like that. So I think that, yeah, it's not quite the magic to say it's about the money, but it is for these clubs and it's a massive, massive thing for Boreham Wood.
I want to know if Boreham Wood get to Wembley, and let's face it, why not? who will go and support them? Because they've already doubled their average attendance. They're the lowest attended club in their division. So you can imagine for this game at Bournemouth, you know, diehard fans get their aunts, uncles, kids to come along who wouldn't normally be interested. There's going to be a lot of tickets available for Wembley. So
honest.
I don't know how big Boreham Wood is. I think I've been once. I don't think it's a very big place. I mean, would it be filled with Spurs fans thinking, yeah, I've always had Boreham Wood as my second team? Would there be people claiming, you know, deep down they've always had a fondness for Boreham Wood? Would people feel they had to lie about their attachment? Or would people be honest and say, I'm just going to pretend because this is fantastic? Because you get on telly for a start, don't you? Because you just hold a balloon and cry or laugh or cheer and suddenly you're the most romantic image of the country.
The population, according to Google, a quick Google search, 31,074, very specifically in the last census.
Get them all into Wembley then, put it that way.
Still not enough.
No, but I think, well,
very close to Barnet, you know. bring some Barnet fans with
you. Yeah, true. I mean, one thing, linking it back to my team, Lincoln, and our cup run when we were in non-league, which was, you know, we've got bigger fan base now, principally because of that cup run. And a lot of the newer fans are families and kids who came during that cup run because, wow, we're on the BBC. That's my team. That's where I live. We're on the BBC. We're winning games on the telly. Wow.
Do you hate them for being newcomers?
Nah. They need to see some tough times like I did at Bury back in the day. But no, I don't begrudge it at all. I think it's fantastic. But it is amazing, and my dad commented on it in the years afterwards, that the change you saw going to home games with all the families that were there. And that started from that cup run. So yeah, I agree with you. There won't be loads and loads and loads of people from Boreham Wood, but there might be local schools, and I'm sure the club will look to capitalise on that as well. And that's, again, where these moments are significant, because it's exposure. And you do have, and we've talked about a lot, kids these days, they have their Mbappe PSG shirt, let alone Manchester United or Liverpool, don't they? It's about FIFA and these global superstars. Whereas if they can attach themselves to, hey, that's my local team on the BBC, that's brilliant.
If they can take over a Boreham Wood on their FIFA career mode one day, then that is the dream, of
Absolutely.
Course. Still there on Football Manager, so go for it straight away,
exactly.
Kids, if you want to. It was a special moment. They're up next against Everton at Goodison Park. Very quickly, Frank Lampard made his return to a dugout in English football. A comfortable win over Brentford. I guess it was a positive. I think one thing that stood out for me was just the shape at Everton, three at the back. I called it, but Donny van der Beek and Dele Alli weren't in that team, and I imagine they've been brought there to be involved, so maybe it will change when they are available, cup tied, of course, but a good start for Frank Lampard.
Yeah, I mean, what I think the most significant thing was the sort of briefing from the players afterwards, making it clear they weren't happy under Rafa Benitez, and wasn't it great to have a young, progressive manager who can do little tricks in training, gets involved. The word, I think, is rejuvenated in every sense. So he's thought about the tactics. He's tried to make the place feel more energised, positive. I think on a weird level, if you come into a club where there has become a rift between management style and players and fans, you might say, oh, is it a poison chalice? No, I would argue that's the club you want to go to, because you can make a pretty immediate impact by putting your arm around players who were feeling marginalised or didn't understand the tactics of the previous manager. I've met Rafa Benitez many times, and he's a lovely, intelligent, great company. But I've heard also he can be quite distant as a boss, doesn't listen, has his own way of doing things. And maybe if you come in after him, you can just make a difference just by not being Rafa Benitez and being younger and
friendlier
and also, you know, less rigid in your approach. I mean, Frank Lampard is still learning the ropes of management, and I'm sure he's already doing stuff at Everton that he did not do at Chelsea, but in the interim has thought, oh, I wish I'd done that, or if I'd had time, I'd have tried that. And he must feel he's a bit of a sponge. He's learning all the time, watching trends and so on. That will create a completely different environment for players. And that is almost precisely what the new manager bounce is about. It isn't a superstition or a myth. It's just that players physically feel different, because training feels different and looks different and sounds different. And when they speak, they are listened to. Because most of the time, if you're a new young manager, that is what you can do. You can be part boss and part friend, because you're close enough to your own playing career to say you understand what they're going through.
I agree to a certain extent. And you have to factor in that this was the perfect game for that kind of bounce and for this kind of manager that Frank Lampard is, home to a Brentford team who I think are maybe starting to get a bit jittery about their Premier League survival because they're not in great form. So I do think there's still quite a lot of work to be done at Everton tactically. Hugh, you mentioned it with those new players coming in, how they're going to fit in. And they've obviously got a massive, massive game this week, haven't they? Away at Newcastle. It'd be very interesting to see whether, as you say, Hugh, the tactics remain the same. But I think in those games, it'll need to be more than Frank Lampard, the happy arm round the shoulder, Mr. Positive. He needs to show a bit more than that if Everton are going to really rise up the table.
Well, Boreham Wood take on Everton in the next round. We'll see if Frank Lampard's good start continues in midweek as well. Elsewhere in the FA Cup, Plymouth and Kidderminster Harriers came so close. Alison, you were at Stamford Bridge where Plymouth came so close. Ryan Hardy with a moment that he and the Plymouth fans will probably never forget, missing that penalty which could have sent the game to a shootout. What did you make of their performance?
Tom said what he liked about the FA Cup weekend was a lot of the shocks or near shocks came from positive football. Plymouth didn't do that. They set up five at the back, which isn't what they normally do. And they were very, very, I mean, their approach was spot on, really. They Stephen Schumacher, their manager, decided, European champions, what do you do at Stamford Bridge? Well, you just make sure you're very solid and concentrated at the back. And if you get a set piece, who knows? And that is exactly what happened. They were concentrated and solid at the back, got a set piece, got an early goal, and then defended and defended and defended, and just got slightly more progressive as the match went on. And they had nothing to lose, I suppose. So they didn't
score a lovely team goal though. They did have one good move, didn't they, with Hardy down the left that they played out from the back.
I mean, there were 41 shots from Chelsea. It was mostly one-way traffic. Let's not get too romantic about it.
Look, it was total football from Plymouth. Though,
No, they did have their moments. They certainly did. But it was a performance built on let's be realistic as opposed to let's think we've got what it takes to play Chelsea on their own terms. But I have this, I don't believe if you are fouled for a penalty, you should then take the penalty no matter who you are. I just don't think you should do it. And
I don't think anyone should do it, or you don't think it should be like your God-given right? In that some ways it normally is, isn't it? Sometimes a forward's like, I've won this, I'm taking it. Yeah. You think that actually, yeah.
I think if you've been fouled, there's an emotional element to being fouled. You're wondering if you'll get the penalty or not. You might have been slightly hurt. It might come as a bit of a shock. You thought you were going to score. You might be indignant. There'll be all sorts of things happening. You will have a bigger adrenaline rush. And then on top of your adrenaline rush from being fouled, will I get the penalty? And now you've got the added, maybe it'll be VAR'd. And then you get the penalty. Then you get the double adrenaline rush of it being your responsibility to take the penalty. I don't think a human being can take that much adrenaline. And so it proved. Because
no.
Ryan Hardy had said normally it takes a really good penalty.
It was poor.
It was a dreadful penalty. Mm. It really was a dreadful penalty because he was too much for him to take. It should have been somebody else.
But that might not be because of being fouled for the penalty. It might be because it was a penalty inside Stamford Bridge in a situation that you've never been in against the European champions. And the pressure might have got to him.
So why have more pressure?
It is certainly a moment to overthink, isn't it? You'd be almost better flipping it on its head and the captain just throwing the ball to someone about 10 seconds before it's taken, and then they don't have to think about it. Just run up and leather it as hard as you can.
Or, yeah, doing the Sean Dyche and just being like, I'm the captain. I haven't scored a goal for 8 years, but I'm going to do it like he did for Chesterfield in the FA Cup and smash it down the middle as hard as I can.
Mm.
Yeah, that would have maybe been the more responsible thing to do, don't you think?
It was tough to watch. Did anyone feel, Hugh, you talked positively about the lack of FA Cup replays? Obviously, as a
it's brilliant
fan of the lower league, I felt a little twinge of sadness on Plymouth's behalf and Kidderminster's that they didn't get that second chance.
Oh, I see. I mean, I thought you were saying that you were going to feel sad because they never got through.
No, as in just to, you know. We're going to get loads more money because we're going to get a replay on the telly.
I think the thing that is helping teams go through is that it all gets done on the day. I actually think you're more likely to get surprises because of the fact there's no second game. I mean, we'll talk about it in a bit. Do you think Manchester United would have gone to the Riverside and had another 30 shots and not won? No.
Easily with this Man United.
And, you know, the same with, okay, the penalty was missed, but as Alison pointed out, 41 shots for Chelsea. Are you going to keep them to two goals again in a replay? No, you're not. Or one goal, you know.
And also, Tom, you were very happy with the style of play in this round. It's because there were no that you couldn't be tactical about.
Yeah, potentially. It. I'm just throwing it out there.
I've seen so many FA Cup games where it's very clear one team is playing for the money, not for the glory.
We've all seen that. We've all seen that. But I don't begrudge them that because, as the Boreham Wood example shows, they do need the dosh.
You mentioned Kidderminster Harriers a second ago. They came even closer than Plymouth. They conceded a 91st minute equaliser against West Ham and then a 121st minute heartbreaker that put David Moyes' side through. It was a heroic effort from Kidderminster Harriers, you have to say, at the Agborough. I mean, West Ham were atrocious, but what a performance. They really should have scored more than once. It should have never gone to extra time.
Yeah, absolutely. And they kind of continued the style of play that they've been showing us throughout the tournament so far. It was very tough to watch. I mean, also, I'm hoping that Yarmolenko went in and offered apologies and to pay for all the Kidderminster players to go on holiday after that dive in the penalty area. That was one of the more embarrassing things we've seen. Up there with Nat Phillips being absolutely mugged off in his Bournemouth debut for Boreham Wood. I mean, from pirouettes in the San Siro for Liverpool to... He could barely stand up. But anyway... So, yeah, speaking of people who couldn't stand up, I thought Yarmolenko made me very angry. It was all just very disappointing. I think the Kidderminster manager, when that final goal went in on the touchline, he kind of pulled up, he had one of those little snoods on, neck warmer type things. He just pulled it up over his face as if to say, I don't want to see this. I don't want it to happen. This is awful.
It was one of those that was so achingly close for Kidderminster. You felt that there was going to be a chance for West Ham and it needed a moment of quality from Declan Rice to get the equaliser. I thought it was a good goal to win the game from West Ham. Again, a little bit of quality over the course of 10 or 15 seconds and gotten the opportunity and just showed the distance between the two sides. If West Ham were at their best, it maybe would have been a different story on the afternoon. But the fans inside the Agborough, that was again... You know, a part of some of the great scenes we've seen in the FA Cup this year. I just wish they would have won that game.
Don't you? You are getting quite mushy, Hugh.
No, you know, let's put it this way. West Ham's performance warranted defeat and Kidderminster Harriers' performance warranted a win for me in 90 minutes. It was almost there. And that's why it hurts more. It hurts more.
That's football, isn't it? It's about concentrating for every minute you're out there, not making any assumptions. The funniest bit about the game is this is a match against Kidderminster, and yet it seems to have doubled Declan Rice's value. Who knew you could be an England international, but your value could be doubled by the performance you give in a non-league ground?
Declan Rice is in the do-no-wrong period of his career now, though, isn't he? Between now and when he gets his 100 million whatever pound move somewhere, or maybe stays at West Ham, as I'm secretly hoping he might, but he's in the honeymoon phase where he can do absolutely nothing wrong and just get people tweeting, whoa, what a player. Like, oh, thanks, mate. Thanks for letting me know.
The Jack Grealish transfer has now made Declan Rice worth 100 million quid, basically, because he's not worth 100 million quid. Although he is worth a very big amount of money. Yeah. I don't think he's worth £100 million.
It's interesting you say Grealish, because that's what I'm getting at. I think last season, when Grealish was at Villa and everyone kind of loved him and thought, oh, this is brilliant, and everyone then wanted him to desperately be the Paul Gascoigne for England, Declan Rice is that player now. He's everyone's kind of favourite player, favourite other player.
How bad were West Ham, though? You know, Kidderminster were great, and they deserve so much credit for what they've done in the FA Cup this season. But my word, West Ham were awful. Their fans were going absolutely ballistic all over social media. This is why we needed a stronger squad. You know, we should have invested, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I saw David Moyes, you know, and the words gross negligence used in the same sentence because he's allowed this to happen. I mean, they were furious and it would have been pretty bad, I think, had they lost that game. Mm. But do any of their fans have a point around, not the negligence, around whether they should have strengthened? You know, is this going to be a missed opportunity for them this season? Yeah. It's funny, actually, because they were absolutely horrendous against Kidderminster. And at full time, all the broadcasters I heard were talking about them possibly winning the FA Cup, which seemed very, very strange.
Oh, but that's what happens, isn't it? If you scrape through, then you're going to win it. Your name's on the cup. It's one of the many rules of domestic cup competition.
Is this season going to be a missed opportunity because of the lack of transfers?
Well, I don't know. I feel this is partly genius by David Moyes because he's showing that there is no depth to the team, which has been spoken about often, but not tested too much, because they've had a good time in the league. They've had to absorb injuries, but they've had players coming back, and this performance showed that they just don't, by not investing, they don't even have a half a B team. I mean, but that is the ownership's fault, isn't it? It's not his. I'm sure I haven't heard any evidence that he's been turning down the option to buy players. So this is his way of showing, if we carry on, get into Europe again next season, if you want me to stay, I'm going to have to be backed, because this is the sort of embarrassing thing that can happen to us. I'm sort of surprised the fans were turning on. Is that what you're saying, Hugh? The fans were turning on the manager there?
Yeah, loads of West Ham fans.
It's interesting.
Rather than the board. It's always been the board.
I think it's always been the board for a long time, but it was interesting. I was on the train back from my delightful day out at Milton Keynes watching Lincoln lose 2-1, and there are a lot of West Ham fans on the train back into London. And as I often do, I sit there with my headphones on, but no music playing, so I can listen into their conversations and steal all their points for the podcast. Beware, anyone who sees me on a train, I am listening to you, don't worry. And it was interesting, they were saying that a lot of the kind of players, Yarmolenko, Diop, these kind of fringe players, seem to be getting worse every time they play. And they did attribute some of that to the manager, in the sense that you should kind of keep a healthier, happier squad. The ownership problem has always been an issue at West Ham. They're not popular owners, are they? But it did seem to me that they seem to be kind of pointing the finger at Moyes slightly for not getting a bit more out of some of these fringe players.
Not to mention, I think there are some players that have come into the club who haven't had any impact. Kral, who I think got substituted for Rice. Vlasic hasn't really had any impact. You know, and these were players that were meant to add something, that came in during the summer. So I think that it's maybe a mixture of, you haven't brought in very good players thus far, and when we want you to bring in really good players, you haven't managed to get any. So I think there's just a bit of frustration there, I have to say. But look, they got through, and football's about results ultimately. But I think it was a very tough weekend for both Plymouth and Kidderminster Harriers. We're going to talk about more shocks in the FA Cup on the way. Remember, if you're enjoying the podcast, rate us, leave us a review, make sure you're subscribed as well. We'll be talking about a fantastic result for Nottingham Forest, the AFCON final as well, Manchester United on the agenda too. Stay with us on the game. Well, another side into round 5 of the FA Cup is Nottingham Forest, who destroyed Leicester City in an East Midlands derby. It finished 4-1 to Steve Cooper's side. The first 3 goals coming in a dizzying 9-minute first half spell. It was watched for the Times by the chief football writer, Henry Winter, who joins us on the game. Henry, what did you think of the performance from Steve Cooper in particular after knocking out Arsenal in the last round, now Leicester City as well?
He's very shrewd, very underrated coach, remarkably, given what he did with England's under-17s. During that campaign, I spent a day with him at St George's Park and sort of saw behind the scenes what he did, how he motivated the young players, how he tactically, little things, he's got signs on the walls, and it's not your normal sort of resilience, take responsibility, the sort of the legacy stuff which so many of the young teams have got nowadays. It is kill the crowd, work over the referee. He's very much into the sort of the street smarts which England have sort of lacked, certainly at senior level and often at junior level. So he's a very smart individual, intelligent. Dad obviously was a well-known referee. He's quite a character. He's got fantastic contacts in the game. You can see why so many people want to loan in players, because they know he'll develop them.
One of the things that stood out to me was down on the touchline, he had that element of some of the big managers we see, the frustration. Every time there was a small mistake, his team were a few goals up, they were playing brilliantly well, but every time there was a small misplaced pass or a bad decision, it was a bit like Thomas Tuchel. He was furious. He wants that element of perfection there. And you get the feeling that he is destined for a job towards the top of the game.
Well, I just hope he does it with Nottingham Forest and takes them up, because, you know, in my eyes, my age, you know, they are big club, and you've only got, I mean, you were there yesterday, you've only got to go around the ground just to see the history, Peter Taylor, Brian Clough, the players of the past. you know, it's you look into the radio box and there's Brian Laws doing local radio. I mean, history is all around the City Ground. And just to see it buzzing like that, you just hope that, and they've engaged with Steve Cooper. I mean, you'll have seen at the end, what was really interesting is how many of the fans stayed on. I know this is a post-pandemic thing that a lot of fans are doing because they don't want, you know, they're so delighted to be back in the ground. But they were, and also because there's so many touchline interviews that they're fascinated by that. But he was going around to the sort, you know, certainly the three of the stands, obviously the Leicester one was pretty deserted by then. Mm-hmm. And he was giving it the Jurgen Klopp punch style. I mean, there's a real charisma to him. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think he is destined for the top. I just hope he does it with Forest.
Two players in his side who many think are destined for the top as well. Jed Spence and Brennan Johnson down the right-hand side. What did you make of their impact?
Well, again, as against Arsenal, I mean, they were outstanding. I mean, Middlesbrough have obviously got some talent at right back if Spence can be loaned out. I know there were sort of one or two issues with him, but I mean, you know, there's a talent there. I mean, the energy, you know, defensively he's good. I mean, you know, we focus on modern right backs as, you know, can they cross? But actually he can defend superbly as well. He's quite tall. He's lightning quick. So absolutely no doubt that he's not only on loan to Nottingham Forest, he's on loan to the Championship, and he'll be playing in the top level soon. And Brennan Johnson, obviously, with his family background, his dad's been well known at Forest and Ipswich, and, you know, has a good footballing education, good footballing brain, pace to burn, good cross, you know, and a threat getting in the box as well. So, but, you know, there was Sinkenagel in there as well. I thought Worrell, who wasn't completely fit, he came back in and brought some leadership at the back. Cook looks a smart signing. So, look, they've got good players all over who are being made better by an outstanding head coach.
Probably favourites to go through to the quarterfinals as well, with a tie against Huddersfield on the way. The holders, Leicester City, though, dumped out unceremoniously. Brendan Rodgers, their manager, I mean, they're 10th in the Premier League and 10 points off 7th, which is actually, I think, the bigger statistic. How much pressure should their manager be under for you, Henry?
Well, all good managers put pressure on themselves, and Brendan's no different. I was slightly surprised he had a pop at his players, although they did absolutely deserve it because Ndidi was off the place and Marty, I thought, was poor. So, you know, all over the team that they weren't sort of playing as well as they should. But I think maybe things like that should probably be kept in-house. But in terms of his position, I think he's an outstanding coach. He would walk into probably a couple of other top 10, obviously not Champions League teams, but look, he's an outstanding coach. So he won the FA Cup last year. As you say, they're 10th, and he has done it. And he doesn't complain about it, but their squad has taken an absolute battering with injuries. I've got a lot of sympathy for Brendan. And listening to one of the local phone-ins on the way back last night, it was very interesting that how many angry Leicester fans were. And they're saying, this is a trend. Look, it's their club. They're no better than me because they see them week in, week out. But if you take a step back and look at what Brendan has achieved, is it two fifth place finishes, FA Cup final, dealing with this move to the new training ground, which there is a sense that they miss Beaver Drive. They miss that old sort of underdog feel that was whipped up within, you know, the sort of slightly almost village hall type facilities of Beaver Drive, going into this sort of palatial place. You know, they were no longer the underdog. So there's many things he's had to juggle. Obviously, they had to move. It's a magnificent training ground, 100 million quid. It's probably in the top three in the country. But still, all those little things that Brendan's got to juggle, and I think he deserves a little bit more patience.
It did have the feeling, though, their performance. I mean, it was one of those where, despite injuries this season, you couldn't blame the level of their performance, and given the quality of the team that they had out, on anything other than, I think, a good Nottingham Forest performance and a really poor one from them. And you're right, he did mark the card of some of his players, basically saying, you know, there's a few of them that are going to have to leave in the summer. But they're, you know, they're almost on holiday, some of those players, and we're only in, you know, mid-February. Is it right that he does that so early in the season, and will it peter out because of his words?
Well, ultimately, you know, whatever walk of life you're in, that the motivation has to come from within. You shouldn't have to have your boss or your colleague to actually, you know, crack the whip. You get up in the morning and look in the mirror and just get on and do the best that you can. So every player should have that responsibility, particularly with the amount that they're paid, particularly with the sort of, you know, the loyalty and the support of the fans out there. But I was just surprised he did it publicly. I just think that it's, you know, we criticised Jose Mourinho for throwing his players under the bus. So I was, Brendan didn't quite go that far, but questioning the hunger of some of them, I thought was, just to do it publicly, I was surprised for such an experienced manager.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, another championship side that made it through to round five was Middlesbrough. They set the tone for the weekend at Old Trafford on Friday night, of course, knocking out Manchester United on penalties. Manchester United's 30 shots weren't enough to score more than once. Matt Crooks, released by Manchester United at 16, scored Borough's equaliser, which was set up by Duncan Watmore, who was released by United at 12. So a big big evening for those two. There was a big question. Listen, we might as well just get it out of the way, right? There was a big question mark over whether the goal should have stood in the minds of many. But I don't think there's really a question mark over that. I think in terms of the law, the goal should have stood. The question is actually whether the law is an ass and whether this law should be changed, having only been changed this summer. What do you think? What do you think? Should it have, you know, should it be, should this type of goal be scored?
They altered the rules because goals were being disallowed for ridiculous reasons.
But do we need even more nuance, though?
There's no room for nuance, even with VAR, sadly. There just isn't. And I think once, this is a better rule than the previous rule, so let's just get used to it. And I do feel, even whilst that was unfolding, the players and fans probably knew deep down it was going to be allowed because they're sort of absorbing the way it is. There's two things going on. One is constant rule changes so that we're not entirely sure where we stand. But the second one is that handball is always going to be a very difficult thing to interpret. And clearly, if it's considered to be handball and the opposition get a free kick, then it wouldn't have been a goal. But it's considered incidental contact, non-deliberate contact, and so on. You either have a world where if anything touches your arm, which we did have briefly, didn't we? Ball touches your arm, doesn't matter where your arm is, where you're looking, what you're doing. Ah, free kick. Or you accept that limbs move around, get in the way, human beings have them when they're playing sport, and try and be more sensible about it. So I'm happy enough with as it is.
What about you?
I think I probably agree. This one, I see your point about nuance, Hugh, because if it was possible to have any more nuance in the footballing rules, then this one probably could have been ruled out for handball, I think, in that the ball bounces up to the hand, which is slightly out from the body and therefore contributes to him controlling it and therefore them scoring. But I don't want to live in a world where that is part of the analysis, so I'm happy with us not being in a, if it touches your hand, it's handball, and goals like this standing.
You will be unsurprised to know that I think this is outrageous, egregious even. Frankly speaking, no.
The Man United performance, not the handball.
No, the goal should have stood. By the rules, the goal should have definitely stood. I've got no issue with it, to be perfectly honest. But the rule itself, what I would say is, I think it's quite simple, actually. All you have to say is, if it's of your own doing, then it's handball. If like so, you
so
might,
as in because it bounced off him onto his hand.
Yeah, so he tried to he controlled the ball onto his own hand. It's handball, and then he set up a goal. It's handball. Had a clearance been smashed at him from a yard out, it hit his arm, and then he passed it to Crooks and he scored. I don't think that should be, but because he has controlled the ball onto his own arm, you know, you might have to use a different word than deliberate handball. But you'd have to say that is chalked off. You know, Duncan Watmore would not have had control of that ball had it not struck his arm from his own terrible piece of control. That is an unfair advantage due to the use of the arm, and that is meant to be handball, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. So what do we call it? We call it handball of the gods.
Well, you can call it whatever you want as long as the goal doesn't stand.
Incidental handball.
No, because look, there was an incident, funnily enough, including... Chris Wilder. It was at Sheffield United. You might remember it. The defender headed the ball onto Declan Rice's arm from less than a yard away. He then set up Robert Snodgrass, who scored. That goal was disallowed under the rules as they were. And it should have been disallowed under the rules as they were. But it seemed extremely unfair. Declan Rice had had no knowledge that it was going to hit his arm. He couldn't have done anything about it. Duncan Watmore has miscontrolled the ball onto his own arm and then set up a goal. And I mean, I actually think it's quite simple with VAR to have been able to judge the two situations. Come on, I think
to be fair to you, you've come up with a fairly logical way of splitting the two things. But for a man who's spent most of this podcast eulogising about the wonder and the magic of the FA Cup, come on, we all wanted Middlesbrough to win, didn't we? Everyone was watching that going, nah, leave it. It's a goal, it's fine.
I wasn't, I have to say. Especially with 10 or 11,000 Middlesbrough fans just to my right-hand side in my ear. You know, that one stung a little bit. But let's be honest, fantastic job done by Chris Wilder while he's been at Middlesbrough. Mm. You saw great shape, a lot more patience in their play, a really mature performance from them. But Manchester United really should have been winning that match. They should have been.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've been very complimentary of Ralph Rangnick and very excited about him coming to the Premier League, not least for his press match conferences, both before and after the game. But this was the first time I was thinking either he needs even longer than I thought he was going to need, or maybe he's a bit out of his depth and doesn't have an idea of what to do.
And when I say Manchester United should have won the match, I don't mean because they're Manchester United and it's Middlesbrough. What I mean is on the balance of play and the number of chances created, they should have won the game. It definitely looked like, oh, we've been away for a couple of weeks in Dubai. We've been working on our shape and we've got it. We have got it.
You felt
there was a sense of confidence, like this is the plan. And then as soon as Middlesbrough scored, they were like, oh no. The plan's awful. What were we thinking? Mm. We never should have done it. You know, they had absolutely no confidence in it. And that is why the game totally transformed, actually, once Middlesbrough had got that goal. In fact, it had already changed with Middlesbrough just throwing three or four, five bodies into the box, actually around that goal. Mm. It was just because they committed so many bodies forward. There's no midfield at Manchester United. Mm. It was going box to box in two or three passes for about 10 minutes of the game. I mean, if that's what Ralph Rangnick got brought in for, then yeah, there was no point.
So you were in the stadium.
Yes.
So in the game, this week's game for the Times, Tony Cascarino says he doesn't believe there are the personalities and leaders on the pitch to handle that moment you described when they're playing well, but then Middlesbrough score and there's no one to take control of, knowing that that will make shoulders droop and people feel doubtful. There's no one with that force of personality to sort of let everyone know this does not matter. We are still Manchester United. Mm. And that they suddenly become a collection of individuals who don't seem to have a leader between them, which is a bit how we used to describe Arsenal as they hit the skids. But I wondered if being in the stadium, I think that's the you know, we can all watch football on the telly. I think there's certain things you cannot pick up off the telly. And one of them is whether you felt, could you see that happening? Could you see that they suddenly didn't look like they believed and needed to look to somebody to show them the way?
The plan is there under Rangnick. And I think they knew what it was. And a couple of times it happened, they didn't quite score, but they would win the ball, two, three passes, get a shot off. That is clearly what Rangnick wants them to do. When the equaliser went in, they were looking around and there is either no plan B, or what I think is there is no sense of, and you get this at other clubs, Manchester City and Liverpool and Chelsea, if we keep doing X, whatever it is, we'll win. All we have to do is keep doing what we do. That's, if we keep doing what we do, we'll score again. If we keep doing, you know, maybe Chelsea had that against Plymouth. This is what we do. As long as we keep doing it, they will find it incredibly hard to live with us. We just need to go back to that. And some teams, it's let's just keep possession for 15 minutes. Some it's we need to keep hitting a crossfield ball. The space is on the diagonal. Some it's let's keep getting these passes back in behind. We'll create a chance, whatever it might be. There is no thing that Manchester United can go back to say that this is how we win games. They just don't have it. There is absolutely no design in what they're doing. You know, it is genuinely you win the ball and who's in the most space? Get your head up. And it's like, well, that's the player that you give the ball to. And it's you know, it's almost like there are a trillion ways to score a goal if you're the Manchester United team. It's not like Man City. We work the short side. We overload one fullback. We cut it across the face of the goal or back for a tap-in. There is none of it. There is absolutely no design to what they're trying to do. And they looked around at each other. And I honestly believe that that is why they had nothing left, because it was like, we've given everything to this style. We've created 30 shots. We're not winning. And so what now? There was nothing. And
so when you're there looking at that, who on the pitch is the leader on the pitch? Who is trying to interpret what the manager might want them to do? Who is there to lift their spirits?
There is none. And it was painful because it relied on individuals, actually. So I think the forward line relied on Ronaldo's, even though he didn't have a great game, it relied on his experience in terms of saying the ball should be going there, here. And it was very much him as the vocal person at the front. Paul Pogba was the one in midfield who was basically, you know, he's a classy player. He'd returned. And while he was on the pitch, you kind of had a sense that if you got the ball to Pogba, we probably won't lose possession and everyone will feel a bit more relaxed. And when he wasn't on the pitch, it was kind of like, oh my God, what are we doing now? And in defence, it was Raphael Varane, and he got taken off as well. And you had the feeling when Phil Jones came on that, again, you know, the field had been totally levelled. You know, it was like, well, we had quality and now we don't have the advantage in terms of the quality. Varane's gone, Pogba's gone, Ronaldo was still on. But at that point in time, it was like Middlesbrough felt quite comfortable. And you always thought, I mean, I messaged my friend who's a Borough fan. He was in the away section at 90 minutes. I said, Borough are going to win on penalties. Because Manchester United don't have that confidence either to take the game by the scruff of the neck and say, we'll win it in extra time. This is not going to penalties. They wanted penalties. They wanted penalties in the Europa League final. There is no arrogance about this team. There is no swagger about this team. There is no confidence about this team. And if they will limp over the line in a penalty shootout, that is their preference. Mm. So I knew it was going to go to penalties at that point in time, because I've watched this Man United team. I've not been wrong yet. I've been criticised roundly. But they're just, you know... The one thing that I would say about Manchester United is, as a Manchester United fan, I look at Tottenham, I look at Arsenal, they have started the overhaul. They've gone Arsenal probably a season and a half ahead of Manchester United now. Tottenham have started it with Conte. That is a massive emphasis on getting the players out of the club who you don't want there, who probably aren't going to be good enough. And even if you're not bringing in world beaters, you're bringing in players who you feel have high potential or a big future. And Manchester United haven't gone to a strategy of overhauling the squad yet. They haven't. So you hold on to Jesse Lingard, who's going to be leaving. For what reason? I don't know. Anthony Martial wants to go. Bye. See you later. No, you can go on loan to Sevilla. And then what? Is he going to be brought back into the squad with an arm around him? He's not. So they are, I don't know what they're doing, but they're not moving on fast enough. There is no transition. I don't think the football is particularly good under Rangnick, and I know loads of people criticise him for maybe being out of his depth at this point in time. I've said before that I felt he should have changed the style of football virtually immediately, because he hasn't got the players to play the way that he wants to. And then get the players out of the club who aren't going to be able to do that style. He's not doing that. He's trying to force them to play this way. It's not going to work. I mean, you're going to be relying... I mean, I looked at the team... And it was pretty much Manchester United's best team, pretty much. I mean, the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo's playing full time and extra time against Championship side Middlesbrough for me was incredible. The day before his 37th birthday. This is not why he was brought back to Manchester United, to be able to scrape them through against Middlesbrough in an FA Cup fourth round tie. I mean, so, you know, there are so many things wrong. Ultimately, I don't know if Ralf Rangnick is going to be the person to address them, because the two-year consultancy is surely based on his performance now. If he gets nothing out of this squad of players, I've said this before, we're going to hand him the keys to the kingdom. There you go, shape the future of this club that you can't get past Middlesbrough in the FA Cup. Like, I don't want to see that happen either. So, again, I think Manchester United going backwards.
Yeah, the transfer window and performances like this make me, someone who is quite enthusiastic about Rangnick, question the whole thing, really, and whether it's just kind of 6 months of treading water and you're going to get to the summer and he will leave and a new manager will come in and the whole process will start again. I thought it was going to be a kind of pull it all apart type approach that would lead to some kind of style being evident on the pitch, would lead to some players being shown the door, some players improving tactically, looked like they were being coached because that was what was missing under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But it does start, it's starting to feel now like we'll get to the summer and we'll be talking about all this all over again.
Mark my words, you heard it here first. Pochettino will be in charge of Manchester United before the end of the season.
That, if that happens, I'll definitely make you a cake.
What? Are you telling me you're not going to be making me a cake?
Well, it's not.
This is like you're breaking the news to me.
It's not happened yet, so I'm just, you know, keeping you on your toes. But I'll definitely make it happen if he poches in before the end of the season.
Okay, okay. Listen, elsewhere this weekend, Liverpool came past Cardiff in the FA Cup. Pretty comfortable for them. The game was notable, though, Alisson, for the return of Harvey Elliott. Remember, he suffered that horrific ankle dislocation against Leeds last September. He scored a beauty in the game. There was an assist too for Luis Diaz on his home debut. And a nice weekend for Liverpool. Lovely weekend for Liverpool. All wrapped up with Sadio Mane scoring the winning penalty at the Africa Cup of Nations. Although they did defeat Egypt and Mo Salah, so, you know, swings and roundabouts. Let's talk about Harvey Elliott before we go to AFCON. The one question on him, can he make England's World Cup squad? Is he good enough if he stays fit?
He can make the squad. I don't know. I don't know that Gareth Southgate wants to. Gareth Southgate has too many young, promising. I mean, honestly, there's a list as long as his arm of young players that he could go to. On the other hand, if Harvey Elliott, I mean, he's, you know, carries on in as he started against Cardiff, then he'll be hard to ignore, won't he? And I think Gareth Southgate does like, you know, a good news story. There's something, if you remember how you felt watching his injury and the reaction of the players around him when that happened, and you did think it might be career ending briefly, didn't you? It was horrible. And Jurgen Klopp said after the game, he had the worst sort of injury, the best sort of rehab. It's gone as well as it can go. And Harvey Elliott himself said, wow, you know, the physios and medics at the club have been worked so hard on him. And there's something about scoring a goal that requires a bit of, I don't know, commitment to twisting, hitting, turning, just being... having that no mental block about having been injured, which comes with youth as well. So maybe you'll be an even better player for having come through a terrible thing. They always say bad things make you a better person. Maybe they make you a better player. He'll be fitter, stronger, more grateful for the opportunity, a proper good news story. And I do think Southgate has a weakness for those. So on that level, he might want to include him as almost a reward for having had this fairy tale end to what looked like a very bleak start to his Liverpool career.
Too much magic, too many fairy tales. I'm ending it here. too much gushing on this podcast. It was wonderful to see Harvey Elliott back. Remarkable after the injury that he suffered. There's no way he should be in that World Cup squad. England have got enough creative players. They've got enough young players. Raheem Sterling and Harry Kane are going to start up front. We're going to have to say
Southgate has a weakness for
he
a
does,
story
but
line.
I don't think he'll go for it. Harvey Elliott will be a wonderful player. Let's just leave it there.
I don't know.
I don't know. I think he might squeeze in, you know.
What a waste. Then he'll just get to the group stages again and everyone going, throw Harvey Elliott on. And that won't do us any good further down.
He can play out wide. He can play in the middle.
Exactly. That's even worse. We're just doing Jack Grealish and Phil Foden all over again. We don't need it, Gareth. Don't do it, mate. Please.
We'll clip that up for our pre-World Cup squad podcast in about, what, a year's time? No, less than that now.
That's true. You two do.
It's a matter of weeks away, the World Cup. Yeah.
You do owe me on that.
Speaking of international football then, why on earth didn't Mo Salah take a penalty in the shootout as Egypt were beaten by Senegal in the final of AFCON? Why?
Because the fifth penalty is the pressure penalty, so you put your best player on it.
No, you don't do that. Do you know who I blame for this? Cristiano Ronaldo, who somehow legitimised taking the headlines by saying, even though I'm the best penalty taker, I'm going to go fifth and risk not taking one.
Did Gerrard do it once for Liverpool?
He is the one. He is the one. Because
he's not the only one.
They've all gone off the back of him. How on earth are you taking that? Especially if you're going second in the shootout. Are you insane? Why would you go fifth?
Because you're backing your... I'm kind of playing devil's advocate here. But you're saying you're envisaging that glorious moment, which all footballers of that level are egotists.
Why do you have to get the glorious moment?
Because they're egotists.
Exactly. So Cristiano Ronaldo started it.
No, he's not just
prime suspect.
He's prime suspect, definitely. But I can slightly see the logic in that, say, if they were all scored, that then becomes the most pressurised penalty of the entire shootout. If you're 5-4 and you step up, you've got to take it to sudden death. That's a big moment as well. I don't think there is a hard and fast rule. Is there? I mean, if you were managing your team, would you definitely say always, you're the best player, you have to take the first penalty?
I'd want two of my stronger penalty takers on the first two, yes. Because I believe those that make a good start in shootouts usually win. Mm. So the start, particularly the first two, is important. If you miss the first two, you will lose the shootout. So you have to score the first two.
I'm gonna speak to Bill Edgar and get him on the stats.
Get the stats.
Shootouts that have been missed. They missed two and gone on to win. But no, I can see your point. I'm slightly playing devil's advocate, but I can also see the logic of your star player going last.
Alison?
Well, I just don't think you're allowed to mix the order up, are you, sadly? Once you've handed to the referee who's taking the penalties.
Well,
you
can't, yeah.
And that's what you should be allowed to do. That'd be quite good fun, actually. And they should mic them up. And you should hear
everyone. Oh, no, I don't fancy it. I don't want it.
You should hear it all being renegotiated if someone's missed. Because there is something very odd about Mo Salah, one of the biggest names at the Africa Cup of Nations, not taking a penalty kick in the final when it has gone to the penalty shootout that his country has engineered. That's what they wanted. That is what they played for.
But Mane took Senegal's fifth, right?
Yeah.
So there's the similar logic. They've gone for the similar logic and it's paid off because you had the guy missed in normal time stepping up with the pressure of I can win it and banging it in the bottom corner. That was a brilliant penalty. So, you know, he didn't go first. Were you going, oh, wimp, why haven't you gone first?
No, I genuinely, not wimp. Whoa, I'm not saying that Mo Salah's a wimp.
No, as in Mane. Were you watching from the Senegal point of view as well?
You missed my point, particularly if you're going second.
Okay.
If you are going second in the shootout, there's a very good chance it's not going to penalty number 10. So I can understand leaving Mane if you're going first, because I actually think there's a very good chance that you will have to take your fifth penalty if you're going first. There's also a good chance that you won't take the fifth penalty if you're going second. Maybe I'm reading too much into it.
When do they I can't remember. When do they decide?
Do they give the names over
first,
before the order?
Yeah, I don't know. Can't remember. That matters, doesn't it? That matters.
That does matter. I just like criticising people, so I don't even want to know. Okay? I don't even want to know.
But I don't want to know. What I also don't want to know is that Mo Salah was only thinking about that moment when he has the glory, as his teammate from Liverpool did. Because then you look like you're the person what won it if you score the winning penalty, which is slightly unfair, isn't it?
Did you enjoy it, AFCON?
I didn't watch as much of it as I would have liked, but I enjoyed this final. I felt very sorry for the Egypt keeper, who I thought was brilliant in normal time.
He was brilliant throughout the tournament, the Egypt keeper. I would have been distraught had they won AFCON, because the S-housery that was shown for several matches by Egypt.
You can't not just Egypt, though. In the matches I saw.
The ball was in play, I saw, for about 40 minutes in the final. and that includes extra time. A rather remarkable stat that they've played 8 AFCON finals and they've conceded 1 goal, Egypt, in the 8 games, which is actually incredible. And they have won it more times than anyone else. But it was good to see Senegal win it for the first time. They've got a brilliant squad and I look forward to seeing them at the World Cup. Sadio Mane, freshly moved to Paris Saint-Germain, of course, flying the flag for them. Tom Clark and Alison Rudd, thank you for being with me. My thanks again to Henry Winter, who was with us a little bit earlier on. And thank you all for listening as well. Midweek football for us to discuss on Thursday. We'll see you then. But remember, if you enjoy the Times or the Sunday Times, then make sure you're subscribed. If you sign up today, it will be 1 month free. Check it out online. It's thetimes.co.uk/thegame. We'll see you soon.
Listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.